A queer exploration of Pretty Little Liars.
With your hosts, Speak Pirate, aka Joanna. I'm here, I'm queer, and I have a cat named Spencer.
And your other host, LCO123, aka Vina, a proud member of the Church of Vander Jesus.
Welcome to the glove that rocks the cradle. I am happy to report that the episodes continue to be on a bit of an upswing as we move towards the back half of the season. I'm not saying this is a great episode. It's pretty forgettable, but at least it's not like kind of torturous to watch as some of the previous episodes in the season have been. Is it because of Avataria? Are we finally building some narrative momentum? Who can say? But in this episode, Spencer and Marco go toe-to-toe. Arya trashes the Emerson nursery, and we get our third episode in a row of gay ladies smooching as Emerson decides maybe they are endgame, and then Hannah and Caleb are doing a caper to protect Spencer. You get a plot line, and you get a plot line, and you get a plot line, and wow, what a difference it makes.
I agree. I think that, you know, this is still like not a great episode, but I think that by the standards of where we are at, like you said, there is definitely more momentum here. I think it was such a strong choice to have Marco become this adversary for Spencer, as we talked about last week. It makes their dynamic a lot more fun. It also feels like Spencer has something to do for the first time in a while. And I also really appreciate the way that, like, it actually feels like the friendship matters a little bit more between the liars at this point, because you have Hannah feeling guilt about the Spencer situation, and then you also have, you know, this continued dynamic of Arya selling out the other liars.
Well, you know, for a long time, we kept having like episodes and whole stretches of episodes where the only time we got liar interaction was the beginning scenes where everyone would be together and like an end scene where everyone would be together. And other than that, like Arya might flip through various plot lines.
Sure.
Like a little butterfly. But otherwise, everyone was pretty siloed. And that changed in The Eye Abides. We did get more liar interaction. And that trend continues this week as we see, like, Spencer helping Emily build a dresser. And we just see, like, more, you know, just more interaction overall, which I'm really happy about. And also, like, the Emily-Allison stuff, like, we just get more scenes with the two of them.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, we are going to have a lot to say about Emily and Allison throughout this episode. Should we dive right into this opening scene?
Let's go.
So very, very exciting. One of our favorite characters of all time appears in this opening scene. It's Barry Maple. He is back to interrogate Spencer. There's a very kind of fun little back and forth. You know, Spencer, obviously, she's no stranger to being interrogated. And so she's going to have a little fun with it. She's going to volley with it. And she makes sure to make a comment about unbuckling Marco's belt. Barry continues to fire questions at her until Marco comes in over the speaker and calls him out of the room. Marco brings her water and plays a little bit of good cop, which she also calls him out on. And there are just like a lot of metaphors flying around this scene. House on fire, rope in quicksand. She drinks her water and asks if she can go home. He advises her to get a lawyer, warning her that if her signature is on the credit card slip, he will get a warrant for her arrest. At this point, he at least seems to be a little bit on Spencer's side still. He's kind of saying, urging her to tell the truth, saying he wants to kind of help her out here. But Spencer is not taking the bait.
This, I feel like, is one of those, like, it's just one of those things that is happening with, like, time in this part of season seven. Like, for example, oh, it's going to be Hannah's turn. But, like, it was going to be Hannah's turn, like, two episodes ago, three episodes ago. Now, this time, it's Hannah's turn. Like, there's this whole weird time, like, expanding or contracting on itself.
Yeah.
And here we have, like, the police are after the credit card receipt. But, like,
right,
they've been after it since at least the last episode. And now they're interrogating Spencer before they get it. Well, here's an idea, boys. What if you just went and got it? like, what if we reversed the order here? That seems like it could be helpful to everyone. But your mileage may vary, I guess.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. You know, that's one of those things, like, I think I've sort of stopped even looking for logic in these episodes. So I'm like, yeah, sure. Like, I'm buying into the internal logic of the episodes. But you're right. It doesn't make, like, should be a very easy piece of evidence to collect. And so the fact that they'd, like, go to the trouble of interrogating Spencer first is interesting.
Well, it's, like, at the Radley. It's not like they shipped their paper records off to, like, Iron Mountain in New Jersey. And they have to, like, go and, like, get them out with, like, a cart. Like, it's super weird. Also, just a shout out that Barry at one point asked Spencer if her tab was $79. And so I'm just going to say that $79 worth of alcohol, again, not a good place to be in to consent to elevator sexy time. I don't care how overpriced the drinks at the Radley are, unless one drink is $79, I'm not feeling it.
Yeah, I agree. And those were seemingly pretty strong drinks that she was drinking as well.
Indeed, indeed. Hannah gets the shush this week. And then at the De Laurentiis house, Emily has turned one room into a nursery without asking Allie. It's a surprise. Ooh, I am also going to suggest that redecorating an entire room in a house where you are a guest is an overstep. But I guess Emerson is living together now and Emily can stay as long as she wants. And also the nursery is full of Jessica's packed away baby items, such as some nice ballerina lamps. Allie wistfully says that her mom had good taste. I love that is the thing that Allison remarks upon here, because, like, the relationship between Allison and her family is just so messed up that it's like, my mom did bury me alive. You gotta admit, you gotta give it up. She had good taste. In this scene, Emily also mentions the wild stuff that was happening last week. So maybe a week has gone by, or maybe not.
Yeah, she knew how to pick out a lamp, that Jessica De Laurentiis. She also knew how to bury a child alive. Yeah.
Well, also, the idea of Emily, so for one thing, like, is the De Laurentiis house so large that Allie just, like, has not been in this room all week, or, like, has not noticed that Emily has been, like, doing weird stuff in here? And also, not only did Emily do this, but Emily, like, went up in the attic and got, like, Allison's dead mom's stuff out that she's using. I really feel like open communication would serve a little better in this situation.
I agree. It's also just, it's so weird because they're talking about, like, this is not going to be a permanent situation. So presumably, like, the conversations they were having last week were just referring to Allison. Allison is essentially, at this point, the way they're acting is that Allison is essentially acting as a gestational surrogate for Emily. But, like, it's all still very unclear at this point. And also, like, if Emily and Allison are presumably going to stay in each other's lives, like, is the idea at this point that Allison will have a role in the baby's life? Like, what is going on here?
And will the relationship just be, like, landlord-tenant? Like, the baby is just going to be, like, living in this room?
Right. This is my 3-month-old tenant, my landlord mom. It's so strange. It's just, it's so bizarre. It's like, and the way that they're having to act to, like, poor Sasha, like, they're both just, they're having to act like this is all completely normal, which I think just makes it that much weirder. Like, it's like a weird play we're watching or something.
Well, and the other thing that I think is really a problem here is that no matter what is going on, Emily and Allison are, like, duty bound to enter every scene and act as if they understand what's going on. But, like, they can't possibly, the writers don't even understand what's going on. Like, no one can articulate exactly what's happening here. So
yes,
it really, like, and it's just like, well, what have they been talking about in, like, every scene that we don't see them in that has led to, like, these decisions and re-decisions, it's a head scratcher.
It's like they don't speak between each episode, but somehow whatever conflict they ended the previous episode in has been like lightly smoothed over off screen. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's very strange. So Arya is rewatching one of the Avataria videos, which I really like that detail. I really like the idea that Arya's just like, I'm going to check out some of my greatest hits. You know, like she's a little bit bored. She's like watched whatever there is to watch on YouTube. She's like, I'm going to queue up the Avataria video. Why not? When Prezzer comes in, he is calling her out on a night of restless sleep. And this is so Prezzer. He's like, I know I haven't been, you know, very present with all the wedding planning. So how about we can't take dance classes? You pick the steps and I'll pick the time. And he's like acting like a big damn hero about the whole thing. Arya can't commit to the dance class, at least, and is called away by Spencer. Thank God. Anything to escape spending time with this dude.
Yes. In this scene, Prezzer mutters something about a meeting for a press junket that's going to come up later and be stupid. And Arya is wearing a wonderful craft store version of a Letterman's jacket with her own name spelled out on the back in kind of like, I don't know, puffy felt letters or something. We get a nice look at it as she runs out the door.
Yeah, yeah, she is eager to leave this scene.
as are we all. At the liar meeting, Spencer tells everyone about the credit card receipt. Allison snidely asks if Spencer messed anything else up. Hannah wants to know why the hell Spencer was drunk. Spencer says she was upset, and Hannah had a front row seat for why, if she remembers correctly. Hannah is chastened, which is like, I kind of like that Hannah's a little bit chastened here because she was like pretty unrepentant while all of the Caleb drama was originally going on. So I do like that, you know, Hannah does seem to feel like a sense of guilt for a second here, especially because Spencer has not really like called them into account for the way that they treated her in any way. So I like that, like when Hannah gets kind of pushy here, Spencer's like, listen.
Yeah.
Emily talks about where the receipts are kept, but the door codes change weekly because apparently the Radley just has like really extreme security policies regarding its paper receipt records. Sure, Jan. Anyway, Hannah will get the codes from her mom's office and have a little heist during the Radley's weekly staff meeting. She will steal them, and she has no worries about the cameras, presumably because Caleb will handle that. Their hope is that disappearing the receipt will mean no evidence ever at all. I really disagree. Like, if the charge on Rollins' credit card was from 10:45 p.m. and they have her on the security camera video paying at 10:45 p.m., never mind. Don't think too hard. It is all vibes. But I am really excited that we're going to get Hannah doing another heist. And I can just imagine, like, all of the Radley staffers, like, sitting in this meeting and, like, someone just catches a glimpse of, like, Hannah out the corner of their eye. And they're like, oh, God, no.
What is she doing again? Why is she here?
Invoke the Hannah protocol.
Exactly.
They're probably like, they probably all really don't like that meeting. But like this week, they're like, oh my gosh, please let the meeting last until Hannah is gone. Please let the meeting last until Hannah is gone.
What do you think, like in that kind of scenario where like you see Hannah poking around the giant window of receipts, the big receipts, like, you know, like Lion the Witch in the Wardrobe style room of receipts. What do you imagine the Hannah protocol would involve?
I mean, I think the entire Radley system is built on the Hannah protocol of do not engage, but then one, like, wait until she leaves and then try to contain the damage. Remember when she just broke that glass to get Noel's attention?
Yes.
She just threw a glass on the floor. I feel like the entire staff is just like, oh, it's like, They were all like texting their significant others to be like,
yeah,
might be a late night tonight. And like, they're right, because there's going to be a flood. So
yeah, there's going to be a flood. There's going to be a fire. There's going to be like some missing security footage that they
right.
down. Yeah. Absolutely. I also, though, I do really like when Spencer says, because I was upset, because I feel like the liars, and particularly Spencer, are often, like, Spencer is often not given leeway to be upset and to, like, make mistakes when she is upset. I actually feel like this is a moment of real growth for her, that she can say, I was upset, and, like, people make mistakes when they're upset, and I am a human being. And that she gets to actually be a little bit defensive about that, because that feels very different from the Spencer of the early seasons, who, like, wouldn't give herself that permission.
You know, I really like that too. And I think that it goes back to, remember that part that we really liked from the early seasons of how Hannah and Spencer can be mad at each other? Cause it's like, it's safe.
Yeah.
And also, this is very refreshing, because all of the Spencer Hannah stuff in season 7, at least in the back half so far, it's all been very passive aggressive. Like,
yeah,
is like kind of mad because Caleb got gassed in the barn, and, you know, just on and on. And they don't really talk about it. They just kind of like snipe at each other. And so I really appreciate that this is like something that is like brought out into the open. This is a feeling I'm having. And the other person is like, oh, that creates this feeling in me. And then everyone is just processing it just that much more.
I agree. And I remember, and this is something that I think the Bros Watch PLL 2 podcast talked about, like, when you look at season 6 as a whole, when you look at 6A and 6B, which are obviously two very different halves, but, like, 6A pre-time jump is a lot of Spencer and Hannah together and being really good friends and doing a lot of investigating together and, like, being this really coherent team while Aria and Emily are kind of spinning out. And when you look at that up against everything between them post-time jump, it's really, like, it makes it especially sad, because I think the loss is more keenly felt. And so I feel like this episode is one of the only episodes since the time jump to kind of grapple with that a little bit.
I agree.
Yeah. So it's so weird. It's like Jillian shows up and you're like, oh, right. Like, it feels like you're a character from like 4 storylines ago, but like, okay, hi, I guess you're still around. She is here to talk to Prezra and suggest that they start off his press tour in Rosewood. But Prezra is very, very mad because, shocker, they actually want him to talk about what the book he wrote is about rather than talking about his, former English student girlfriend. Jillian has a great line where she's like, I understand that your life is your life. And there's just so much wrapped up in that. But she wants him to stay on message to talk about Nicole. That's the story. And she is seemingly quite frustrated that Prezria got engaged. Now, my question is, if the press attention was going to be shifted off of Nicole onto Prezria, what is that story? Because, like, it seems like the minute anybody starts looking at that relationship for more than 2 seconds, you're like, huh, some of this timeline stuff feels a little wonky.
I totally agree. And I actually feel like it would be a stronger storyline if Jillian stated that explicitly and said that is going to be a death knell for this book, because anyone who interviews you is going to realize that this was like so far out of bounds. But I do actually, though, get the vibe that Jillian does feel like Prezria is not a love story.
I agree. And I really enjoy Jillian in this episode. Like, I enjoy anybody who gives Prezra a little bit of shit. And I feel like the way she said, I understand that your life is your life. Like, this is a woman who is not dumb. Like, she knows that there's some stuff here.
Well, also, this is one of those, like, I'm always talking about, like, oh, with book publishing, like, he just has to physically go to New York. And, like, now Jillian has to, like, physically be here in Rosewood to talk to him about this. Also, it's as if he is acting as if they have just now, in this moment, decided that the book launch is going to be the next day
here in
Rosewood. Like, that is, like, it's not a surprise what day your book comes out. Like, that's something you know about a long time in advance. So that's odd. And also, I do think this is more evidence that a week has passed, because otherwise he would have been out of town in New York for this book launch. So we're going to say that this episode does take place a week later.
Yeah, sure. We'll go with that.
Oh, so back at the Liar Confab, now Caleb is there. He's saying that he can take the security cameras down for 10 minutes only because we need to make there be some tension, damn it. The game whirs, and then Hannah is upset about having to do her turn. But, like, the game decided it was her turn, as I said before, 2 episodes ago. And maybe a week or at least 2 days have gone by. Anyway, the phone says that it wants her to pick up something from a computer repair shop. Just then, Arya's phone gets a text from Avataria saying her turn isn't up yet, and she is playing for A.
I do kind of like this idea that A is making it look like it's one of the liar's turns, but it's like actually another liar's turn, and that's a secret. Like, that's where I'm like, oh, the idea of the game is interesting, and I wish that they kind of would have, that there was more like gameplay like this involved in the playing of the game.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. So, surprise, surprise, Hannah and Caleb are fighting. She wants to go alone. He doesn't want her to. Second verse, same as the first. She asks him to focus on Spencer, saying that they still owe it to her. She says that if it hadn't been for their stupid, stupid love triangle, Spencer wouldn't have self-sabotaged. And Hannah says that she gave Spencer permission to fall in love with Caleb. The only thing scarier than playing the game is losing a friend over it. So there are things in this scene that I like. I like Hannah thinking about Spencer here, and I like her sort of having this moment of reevaluation, especially because Hannah has felt so sort of one-dimensional in a way since the time jump, that to see her be more reflective is really nice. But like, Caleb comes off as a complete ass in the scene because it doesn't even seem to occur to him that like maybe there might be a little bit of guilt to be felt about the whole Spencer situation. Him being the person who kissed Hannah when he was still with Spencer and then like just was weird about it and dragged that whole breakup out for so long. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say Hannah also tells him that she was there behind the door. And that's that's a funny thing to bring up, because similar to what we've been saying about, like, so is Emerson endgame because they're endgame, or are they endgame because Paige decided to leave town? Like, this is a weird thing to bring up here in the Haleb is endgame era, because it's like kind of reminding us that even after the whole Hannah thing, that Caleb went there the night that they killed Rollins trying to get back together with Spencer.
Yeah, it is very strange, and it like continually Caleb seems like so deeply unappealing. Like all they do is squabble. I do really like Hannah specifically naming Spencer's behavior as self-sabotage. I like whenever the liars get to kind of have insights on each other. I just think it is such a fascinating choice to have Caleb, like eventually he'll kind of pay some lip service to this idea that maybe they owe Spencer, but like to be just like so deeply unrepentant here.
Yeah, he just acts completely surprised by the idea that anyone could be all upset by everything that has happened to them. Like,
yeah, there's really a sort of the assassination of Caleb Rivers that has been going on this whole time jump, I feel.
I really, really agree. So speaking of Spencer, she is helping Emily to assemble a dresser, which they are definitely not putting together in a logical order. There's like a drawer that's already done. They're not like building the frame before they stand it up. It's like, oh my goodness, it's a whole thing. But anyway, Spencer suggests that if she could just get Marco alone, she could maybe get him to drop this whole case because he still cares about her. Emily's like, nope, bad idea. She tells Spencer not to overestimate people's feelings for you. Spencer then asks about Emily and Allison, saying, isn't Emily assuming a lot about Allison's involvement with the baby? What a great question. She says, it's a baby, not a puppy. I would also not suggest Emily and Allison get a puppy. Like, if I were working at a rescue, I would have serious, serious reservations about that, honestly. But Emily tells Spencer to back off and stop judging her. Once again, I do like that the liars are having some actual, like, interaction about what's going on in each other's lives. And I appreciate, I appreciate Spencer kind of calling this out as, wow, this seems like it's going to be a disaster.
Yeah, it's nice to think that, like, Spencer's actually kind of had her eye on the ball around this a little bit, since they all have felt so disconnected. Once again, though, it's like this weird thing where, like, why does there have to be the baby? Because, like, I so wish that this was just Spencer saying to Emily, like, it seems like you and Allison are getting close again. What is this about? Do you feel like you're protecting your heart? Rather than, like, the baby, it's all about the baby. You know, like, I don't care about the baby.
Well, you know, the other thing that I think is, like, very... very weird that no one talks about with all of the baby, 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 is that, like, these women have spent, like, years of their lives being stalked by, like, a faceless psychopath.
Yes.
Which it shows no sign of stopping anytime soon. So, like, have they never watched Days of Our Lives? Do they not know that, like, every baby is just waiting to be switched with some other baby? That every baby is about to be kidnapped by a biker gang? And, like, I mean, it just is not, it's not a great environment to bring a baby into. There are going to be, like, so many hijinks of switchings, kidnaps, you know, demon possession, like, anything can happen. So I really feel like someone should be maybe bringing that up.
And I mean, even within their own town, the amount of, like, stuff with babies that's happened, babies going into asylums or coming out of asylums or being switched with their identical twins or whatever.
Yes!
Like, there's, yes. Yeah. The other thing that I was going to mention earlier, but I'll bring it up here. Like, why Emily and Allison are still staying in Rosewood at this point? Like, I get it. We have the whole thing with the game and da, 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 da. But, like, why would Allison want to stay in this house of horrors that she grew up in?
Excellent, excellent question.
Yeah. So, although I do think a very consistent trait is Emily, like, Spencer being protective toward Emily and Emily getting very defensive toward Spencer when she does that. I think that that's a consistent trope in their relationship that I like.
Mm-hmm.
And we've even seen it with Allison before, or, like, Allison involved in the triangle.
Yeah. And, like, Allison and Spencer do tend to, like, kind of talk a little bit more than some of the other liars do about what's going on in Allison's love life. So
For sure. Yeah. I just think it's that Spencer is, like, wants to get in on the gay gossip, you know?
You know it.
Yeah. So Prezra is doing some classic Prezra man moping when Arya comes in and tells her, and he, when she comes in, he tells her that Jillian wants him to do the press tour solo, which, like, again, like, why would this not have come up, like, a month ago? And he's like, I told her I'm not going to do it. In a way that, like, just makes it so clear that all he wants is for her to give him permission to do it. She suggests that he goes for it since it'll help them to build their future. And she doesn't really feel so comfortable answering questions about Nicole now or, you know, really being in the spotlight. What about questions about her being his former student, huh? Does she feel comfortable answering those questions?
Amazing. Like, it does seem like as soon as she walks in the door, it's clear that he's, like, a code blue for man pain.
Oh, yeah. And it's very much like, okay, well, if you insist, I'll tell you what I'm upset about. You know, like, that's really the vibe that he's giving off.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so over him. It's been so nice when he was just, like, in New York all the time.
I know. I just want him to go, like, tend to Nicole off screen somewhere.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. Yes. Okay. So Hannah and Caleb are arguing some more. But before they were arguing about going to the computer repair shop, now they're arguing post having been to the computer shop and retrieved this hard drive off screen. Hannah is worried that it will explode. Caleb, like, does not take her concern seriously. Actually, the hard drive just plays a Patsy Cline song. Hannah talks about Patsy Cline and the dollhouse, and Caleb wants to know, how does all this connect to Lucas? And this is our reminder that, like, oh, right, right, we think Lucas is AD at this time. Hannah is once again sure that Lucas isn't AD due to him giving her an alibi in the early days of the Charlotte murder investigation, a fact that, like, I had nearly forgotten about.
Yeah, my note on the end of this scene is, Hannah still doesn't think it's Lucas, and oh god, I am just so bored. Because I feel like it's just, so, everything here is just, like, cut and paste. Like, Hannah and Caleb are squabbling about, like, how they each want to handle an A thing. There's some, like, MacGuffin computer chip or, you know, hard drive or flash drive that, like, has some mysterious old creepy music on it. And then, like, Hannah is inexplicably defending Lucas for reasons somewhat unknown.
I feel like this hard drive is 100% one of those, like, don't think about it, no clues, just vibes. Because, like, A planted this hard drive for Hannah to find, and now is making it like, oh, it's this big thing, you have to drop it off so that A can get it back. Like, what? Did A, like, A just wasn't free during the hours that the repair shop was open? So Hannah's like the task rabbit here. Like, go pick this up for me, please. Yeah, it's, and it, like, what is on this hard drive that's incriminating in any way? Absolutely nothing. It's just a Patsy Cline song.
I think it would be very funny if A just started sending the liars on, like, their errands.
Yeah, like, pick up my dry cleaning. I have a couple reserves in at the library if you could go grab those.
A did have the liars pick up their dry cleaning with the red coat.
That's right.
Back in season two. Yeah.
See, it's really, this whole game is just time management, really.
It really is. It really is. This is just A learning how to delegate and have time for self-care. So this is a pretty good scene. Spencer shows up at Margo's apartment, and immediately she starts taking her coat off in a way that made me wonder if she genuinely just came here with the idea of trying to, like, fuck him for getting off with a potential murder charge. He asks her to say what she's going to say, and, you know, quickly seems to shut down anything physical happening between them. She tells him that she is the same person that she was 3 days ago. She thinks that he is fair and decent, and she points out that Archer was a monster. Why shouldn't he die the same way he lived? Margo argues that this is about the justice system. She pleads with him not to be a cop, to just let this one slip through the cracks. And he says, no, he can't do that. He gets called away, and Spencer spies and pockets a flash drive with Lucas's name on it. Now, I think this scene is really interesting. Like, just as a scene itself, I think that this is a good scene. I think that, like, Troyan really gives it her all here. I think, as we've talked about, she and the actor who play Marco have a good kind of, you know, antagonistic chemistry. But there's also a sense of, like, there is some emotion here as well. I find it very interesting that, like, I feel like Spencer really tips her hand in this scene, because she is basically admitting, like, I was involved in Archer's murder for sure. And, like, basically, I know that he died in such a way that, like, was bad, but should be okay, because I know that he was such a terrible person, you know? Her tactics here do not seem terribly Spencer-y to me, which I find interesting. I did have a moment of thinking, is this Alex Drake at one point? I don't think it is. I think this is genuinely Spencer. But what do you make of the way that she approaches this scene with Marco?
I think that she does, like, Emily kind of told her, like, don't do this. So we know that, yeah, Spencer was, like, thinking about this. But I think that it becomes clear from, like, the very first moments of the scene that her first plan isn't going to work. Like, her first plan was, like, I'm going to seduce him, and then I'm going to try to get him to drop the charges.
Yeah.
But, like, Spencer says, because he still cares about me, like, when she's talking to Emily, like, that's what she says. But I think that we know from how this eventually plays out between them, it's also really possible that she was going to fuck him and then be like, well, you can't come after, like, what, you know, you've just, like, committed career suicide, you're gonna not be able to charge me, you know, like, it's also possible that she was hoping to, like, get him off her back by like then blackmailing him mm-hmm. with their relationship. So I think she probably would have done either thing, but it becomes really clear early on that he's not going to fall for that. She then kind of turns on the tears. So it's kind of like, you know, she's crying to get out of a traffic ticket kind of a situation, except
sure.
instead of a traffic ticket, it's like a little vehicular homicide, you know, between friends, etc.
What's she going to do? Not for murder.
But I do like that we then get this, like, she has like plan A, plan B, and then eventually plan C, like when she steals yeah. that hard drive, because not only does she want to know what's on it, but then it's going to compromise Marco. So yeah, I thought this was a great scene.
Yeah, I agree. It's interesting to see Spencer reacting in this particular way.
For sure. So Spencer steals the drive, and then the Liars have the gang all together again. This is nice. We see them doing their like getting together at various points in the episode instead of just kind of bookending the beginning and the end. They have the gang together. Spencer plays the footage on the drive, and it shows Lucas going back to the cops and admitting that they caught him in the lie. So he's back to tell the truth. Hannah needed his help. She asked him to lie, but he doesn't think that Hannah had anything to do with Charlotte's death. As for her friends, well, he can't vouch for them. He's seen a lot of things they're capable of, so let's just say he wouldn't be surprised. Spencer slams the computer shut, sure that Marco is building a compelling case against them and that Lucas will see them all in jail. Hannah insists it's not him. She says he's weak. He's not AD. He's her friend, like all of them. The Liars point out that he destroyed Allie's shrine and stole Caleb's money and joined Mona's army. What an old assortment of grievances. When they said Allie's shrine, I was like, well, yeah, but Allie isn't dead anymore. So, like, really, I really feel like you get a mulligan on that yeah. one. Like, you destroyed a shrine dead. To someone who, like, wasn't dead, like, and is now back. Like, yeah, I really feel like that should be, that should be erased. But Hannah is sure of Lucas, she swears, as sure as she is about all of them. Arya, tonight playing the role of Judas Iscariot, is like, not true! And then she's like, you tossed him out of a rowboat once, you were so scared of him. This is a valid point. But then Arya suggests that what they should do is they should stake out the locker for when Hannah drops off the hard drive. And there's a moment of like, how does Arya know that? But she plays it off as if Hannah told her and no one follows up. Allie points out that this plan of they stake out, try to find A, absolutely never works. But Spencer, unusually optimistic, insists they only need it to work once.
This is a very fun scene. Like you said, it's so great to see the Liars actually getting to play off of one another. I also just love, like, Spencer is so much fun when she's frustrated. And that moment after they watch the video when she just slams the laptop down and goes, God damn it. Like, it's so satisfying. And also just Arya is so great. Like, that they obviously had to do some, like, careful script work to have Hannah be like, I trust him as much as I trust all of you, my fellow friends, the Liars, and you would never betray me, right? And then, you know, Arya sort of having the double entendre of like, not so true. Oh no, I'm talking about Lucas, not me. Like, it's really good. I think this is a very fun mode for Arya.
I definitely agree. I do feel offended on Mona's behalf that Hannah is so ferocious in defending Lucas.
Yes.
Even though, like, you know, we never really get to see her do the same thing for Mona. And also, it's very odd that, like, when everyone is like, he destroyed Allie's shrine, he's lost all of Caleb's money. Like, nobody's like, yeah, he was on the A-team with Mona originally. Like,
yes. Well, they forgot about that.
I feel like that's actually probably the most damning thing about him.
But he gave Emily a creepy massage.
Yeah, he kissed Hannah when she was unconscious. Like, these are yeah. He drank that random cup of beer at that party. I mean, we really need to, like, level set on his disturbing behavior, I feel.
his worst sin was drinking from that dirty cup.
And also they have this whole like Lucas, not Lucas, Lucas, blah. And then we get like a 3-second cut shot of like Lucas in a limo. And we guess that he is reading the recently stolen comic book. So this is like a little cutscene that they insert to try to convince us, the audience, that Lucas really is A, as if we haven't been watching this show for 7 seasons and we don't know how anything works.
And to quote Lucas, it's actually a graphic novel.
You know what? No, it's not. Anyway.
The laugh that Kelsey and I let out when he said that, it was like, I think I had to pause the TV for a second because it was like, I think that's one of the funniest lines that's ever been on the show, honestly. Just, it's a graphic novel. So over at the De Laurentiis house, Allie is rushing off to work, but it's Emily's day off. Okay. I guess that's the way this school works. Emily has a mobile in hand and is concerned about Allie's eating habits. Apparently, Allie keeps forgetting to take her prenatal vitamins, and Emily suddenly goes to a very extreme place, calling Allie out for being a flake about everything and accusing her of someday in the future dropping off the baby and running off to Paris, to which I say, ma'am, are you okay? Like, is that not what Emily pitched this whole situation as? Like, who's raising this baby? Where are we raising this baby? How are we raising this baby? I've got a lot of questions. Allie, seeming to not want to engage in this particular conversation, defiantly takes the vitamins. Then Emily gets a message that Hannah has gotten her game instructions.
So I have a lot to say about this scene. For one, Emily has this mobile that she got from her mom's house because Pam was away for the weekend. So, like, I just have some questions. You did this because you still haven't told Pam about this whole, like, baby situation that you are engaging in. Okay. Interesting choice, but okay. Also, you just convinced Allison to have this baby last week, and at that point did seem to be indicating that Allison's job was having it and then like pass it off to Emily, but now she's like yelling at Allison about how she's eventually gonna go to Paris and leave Emily with the baby just like Emily had asked her to do. So yeah. I'm also just gonna point out again that Emily is living in Allison's house, and her behavior as a house guest this week is that she completely redid one of the rooms, taking all of Allison's dead mom stuff out of the attic to do so, and now she's like yelling at Allison about these vitamins. I really feel like Allison would not be out of line to be like, Emily, I think that couch on the loft is looking better and better for you and our little child.
Yeah. Emily, take your mobile and go.
Oh, man. But yeah, I mean, what is happening? What is the plan for this baby?
It's so strange. And again, like, I know I'm such a broken record here, but like, if this was them just arguing about their relationship, it would make a lot more sense. If it was a thing of like, they had moved in together on some kind of whatever weird trial-y basis of like being closer, or like maybe Emily decided that she wanted to move in with Allison and Allison invited her or whatever. And then Emily was saying, I'm worried that you're going to leave. And the reason I'm worried you're going to leave is because I'm in love with you. Like, that would make so much more sense than having this baby in the storyline at all.
Yeah, like, it's almost like, do they know that the baby is going to be born and it's going to be a baby? Like,
yes, it's not a metaphor. It's a baby.
Yeah, it's not a puppy, as Spencer said earlier. It's a baby. Like, yes. they really do not seem to have, like, I don't know. They don't seem to have, like, fully processed this. Like, they think, like, a teenager is going to be born and, like, then live in the nursery. I don't know.
Yeah. I think they think a metaphor is going to be born, quite honestly.
Yeah. Okay, so Hannah has her game instructions. The locker drop, which I thought she already knew about because of the R thing, whatever, vibes. The locker drop has to be made at the exact same time as the Radley staff meeting is taking place. This is one of those things where no one apparently worries that AD will, like, I don't know. It's just like, you can have someone else drop it off. Also, no one suggests, like, having Hannah steal the codes ahead of time and just have Caleb and a different liar do the Radley escapade, but we need for there to be tension. So what they decide is that Hannah is going to do the Radley caper after she drops off the stuff in the locker. Emerson will stake out the school. Aria has to go to Prezra's press event. Spencer gets a message that the police want to schedule her second or 11,000th interview. I think it's so funny that they're like, we want to schedule your second interview. Like, she's applying for a job. Like, okay, so second round interview tonight. Also, why are they interviewing her again when they still don't have the receipt? What is happening that nobody can just go to the Radley and get the receipt? I don't, like, are all the police cars out of gas? Like,
we could possibly get a receipt.
Like, are their GPSs broken? What's happening? Okay, so they're scheduling her 11,000th police interview. Caleb lingers behind as the liars kind of file out to take the blame on himself that no one else is really placing on him for Spencer drinking that night. I wish that Spencer would just punch him in the head, but he vows that he and Hannah will not let her down this time. To which my note was just, ugh, the men are back this week and they continue to be the worst.
Yeah, it manages, it's, I guess, sort of technically an apology a bit, but, like, it manages to just feel very condescending. And it's also, there's also this element with Hannah and Caleb here of, like, if you do something bad to a person, you can't just, like, magically erase it from existence by, like, then doing something good for them. Mm-hmm. And it feels very much like the way that these two are acting is, like, oh, well, this is just gonna, you know, magically, like the past mistakes, it was like on a dry erase board and we can just like magically scrub it clean by like helping Spencer out this one time. And like, that's not how that works. Spencer's pain was still real. And it's great that you want to help her now, but like, that doesn't mean that you didn't hurt her before.
Well, and if Spencer hadn't gone to the bar and gotten really drunk and like kind of implicated herself in this murder investigation, it's as if that had not happened, Hannah and Caleb would basically feel like, well, we didn't do anything wrong, no harm, no foul. And I don't really think that's true.
It's really weird. So a scene though that I like a lot more is Hannah is finishing up at the loft and opens the door to find Mona. Hannah immediately lies about where she is going and Mona is like, girl, don't even try. She calls her out on being shut out once again. Hannah hesitates for a second and then produces the hard drive. Mona suggests herself as another pair of eyes, but Hannah is still sort of in the closet with her friends about the Mona of it all, which Mona quickly susses out. She makes a remark about how here she is. She'll help Hannah and her friends yet again and then crawl back under a rock. How many times does she have to save all of them until she's finally part of the group? How many times does she have to prove she loves Hannah until Hannah leaves Caleb? Hannah at least has the decency to look guilty.
Hear, hear. Also, I feel like we've seen like so many scenes of Caleb squabbling in this episode.
Yeah.
And I love that, like, when Caleb squabble, they're squabbling over absolutely nothing. But when Vandermeeren have a disagreement, it's over, like, substantial issues here.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just very satisfying to have Mona put into words this dynamic that we have talked about so many times. And then also to have, like, it actually land for Hannah. Like, Hannah clearly heard this and, you know, is has a feeling about it, you know?
Well, and we have talked, like, we used to talk in the early seasons of the way that, like, Lucas gets to be openly in love with Hannah, whereas Mona has to be like secretly in love with Hannah, and how the Mona and Lucas storylines are so often mirrors of each other. So we also have in this episode, Hannah like standing up ferociously for Lucas in the face of like, you know, not much evidence. They never have much evidence, but in the face of strong vibes against him.
Yeah.
And, but still like forcing Mona to stay undercover.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I like it. I like it a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Over at Prezra's event, lots of people are there. Not one of them is Arya. He texts her peevishly.
Peevish is a very good word to use for Ezra here.
Yes.
So at the school, Hannah drops off the hard drive, nodding to Emily and Allie as they stake out.
Yes. In the Emerson baby nursery, Arya has taken down the mobile that Emily stole from Pam's house. She has replaced it with a mobile of some liar dolls. It is a much better quality craft than we have been seeing lately. And for this mission, Arya is in her badass black hoodie.
Yes. Yes. I really love Arya in the black hoodie.
It's a winner.
I think other than Mona, I think that she's probably the one who wears it the best other than Mona.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, Spencer at certain points, but yeah, Arya gets into it.
Yeah, Arya does it really well. So in the hallway, Emily apologizes to Allie for earlier, saying that she is scared that she won't be able to do this. Allie says that she feels like Emily is testing her, but before they can really go much further, they hear a sound. Allie goes around a corner and shrieks. Emily goes off running, and we see that Allie has been, like, knocked down, and once again, Emily has to, like, lead her poor injured lady to her feet.
Okay. Okay. Tell me. What has happened to Allison? Did she get, like, knocked down some stairs? Did she, like, trip on some stairs? Did she just, like, sort of get knocked over and onto some stairs she fell? Like, what is happening here?
Yeah, I have no idea. Great question.
Did she faint? Like, what? It is very unclear. It's like, and the way that she screams is like she screams like she is literally being murdered. And in fact, what has happened is that she is like somewhat prone on some stairs.
Yes. Yeah. She's like, and she's like on the edge of the stairs too. Like, yes! It's not like she's like bumped down like a whole bunch of stairs.
No, unlike when she was pushed down an entire flight of stairs by Rollins at the bed and breakfast.
But yes.
I think we're supposed to feel here like, oh no, the baby. Like, has Allison fallen down a bunch of stairs? Now the baby will be lost. That's just like, first of all, this is like two stairs. And second of all, it's real unclear what exactly has happened to Allie here. So.
Correct. Yes.
But I love how quickly Emily abandons this plan. She's just like, oh, come on, let's go home. This was never going to work anymore.
Yeah, yeah, let's get out of here.
So Arya is still at the De Laurentiis house, and she is trashing the nursery. Oh, man, talk about understanding the assignment. I love it when Arya gets to just wreck a room. She is throwing red paint or blood around. She's breaking the furniture. She's stomping items underfoot. She, like, rips up a teddy bear and flings the stuffing around. She is into it. But then, boom, 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 she hears Emerson arriving at home.
Yes. Yeah. Super, super suspenseful. Yeah, I do, like, I think that there's definitely a reading here that Arya, like, I think that maybe what we're supposed to believe is, like, Arya is taking out her rage on being targeted by AD on this room. But I also think that there's a real reading that, like, Arya is taking out her rage about Prezra both the Prezra of the present, who has been letting her down constantly, but also like the Prezra of the past, because I've got to believe that revisiting all this Avataria stuff has made her kind of revisit like the reasons why she wrote that police report in the first place. So I really like this as like an expression of Arya's unbridled rage.
Well, and we've talked before about how like the best parts of A are when A is acting like a demented life coach. Like,
yes,
this isn't exactly that, but you're giving Arya an assignment that like Arya herself has trashed. Like she trashed Byron's office with Allison that one time. She trashed Prezra's apartment. Like, you know, we have seen Arya wreck a room before. It is not something she doesn't enjoy. So it's almost like, you know, it's almost like, you know, AD is like, let the darkness take hold, let it course through.
Yes.
And Arya is like, you got it. Let me rip this teddy bear in two.
Well, and like the creepy mobile that she puts up, like that just looks like an Arya art project, honestly.
I wish that there had been more focus on the creepy mobile. Like we just see it in like one little part of the shot and then we don't really get to focus on it again. But yeah, that mobile is amazing.
It's incredible. And so we're cutting back between like Arya's POV and Emily and Allie's POV here. But Emily and Allie, somehow they have like gotten all the way to the master bedroom before they realized that there was somebody in the house and before Arya heard them.
Oh
like,
my God.
I don't know. Nobody has much like spatial awareness right now, I guess.
And this is like another moment when like we talked about how Prezra's apartment and in fact the entire building like sometimes has another level and sometimes doesn't. Like the layout of these spaces being so indistinct. It's like,
yes.
Is the master suite on the first floor? Is it on the second floor? Where is anything?
Yes, what is going on? Yeah, we don't really know this like weird extra room that Emily apparently built in a day. Like we don't really know where that is.
Oh, right. Maybe she just like built an extension onto the house. Like
maybe she
was asking. But I thought that the nursery room was Allison's old room from when she was in high school. I thought that was the room that it was.
I mean, probably it is, but who knows? Honestly, who knows? So we have this shot where like Emily just like goes for it. She hears the noises. Arya is like just like bumbling and bumping around and like, knocking the things and scraping up her arm and just like bulling a china shop Montgomery over here. And so Emily grabs this big vase and starts after this mysterious noise that she hears. And we see a shot of Arya having snuck outside.
Yes, I felt like when you talk about how much noise Arya is making at this point, it's almost like, is she making so much noise because she wants them to think it's like a much bigger person who's like tearing through their home?
I know!
It really seems like that. Like it is an extraordinary amount of noise.
Yes, I completely agree. You go ahead, Prezra. Oh.
At Prezra's event, he is rambling on about writing as an exorcism. No, and then all of the middle-aged ladies of Rosewood, they're all there, they're out in force, and they all want to ask him about the coal. Prezra dramatically announces his engagement to Arya, and gives many fine words that do not match any of his actions regarding their relationship.
Yeah, it's the minute he said it's an exorcism of sorts, like just the way he delivers that line, that pause he takes, it's like Jesus Christ. And you know, Arya, his inspiration in all things. I just hate it. I hate it so much. And then there's an incredible edit here where over the end of that scene, we hear the audio. What a monster. And what a monster indeed, liars. The liars are all here in the nursery commenting on the state of the very much destroyed nursery. The liars, except for Hannah, I should say. They wonder whether the hard drive thing was a setup and whether Lucas could have planned this.
Yes. They don't think that Lucas was involved because, or they think he had a helper because they're like, again, like time collapses in on itself. They don't think that whoever was at the high school would have had time to do all this before Emerson got back. And it's just like, oh, okay, whatever, whatever.
Lady. Sure. Yeah.
In the records room where all of the receipts for anything that has ever been purchased at the Radley are stored, Hannah is in the receipt room and she is tearing through boxes.
Yeah, yet another scene of a liar just like playing opposite a room, essentially.
Yeah, and we got, you know, we had Aria like wrecking the nursery. Now we have Hannah wrecking the receipt room.
Yeah, just a lot of destruction of property in this episode. So back in the nursery, while poking around, Spencer finds Arya's missing earring on the floor. Arya quickly tries to play it off as her having just dropped it, you know, in this moment. Also, of course, like, Arya, rookie move, destroying a room while you still have your earrings on. Like, come on. But also, great callback to the earring that they planted with Byron's office. Like, yes. Yeah, I like that moment a lot. Emily is like super, super upset, much more upset than Allison, interestingly. And Spencer is like giving Arya some looks that seem to suggest that she's figuring out that something's weird here.
I wish that these had been Arya's fork earrings. I think that would be so fantastic. But I also really, really like that earring callback, especially because that was like a wrecking room where Allison and Arya were in it together. So like now, you know, Arya and Allison have stood together in a room that they wrecked previously, and now here they are standing together in a room that belongs to Allison that was wrecked by Arya. I just think they have some nice layers going on with that.
Yeah, I will agree with that for sure.
At the Radley, Hannah cannot find the receipt. Caleb comes in to helpfully tell her that they're going to go to jail if they don't get out of there immediately. Hannah's like, hey, I can't find it. And so Caleb strews all of the box contents on the floor and takes a like nearby wrench or something to bust a pipe in the hopes of flooding the room and just destroying everything.
What do you think of this as a move here?
Well, I feel like, and I don't actually remember, like, I don't remember if this thing that Hannah and Caleb do does, like, this is the last we hear about the receipt, but the fact that Hannah can't find the receipt in these boxes, to me, says, well, A, probably already has the receipt, like, or the police have the receipt, like, it's taken everyone, like, all this time to get over to the Radley and try to get at this receipt. Yeah, I don't know, but it also seems, it just seems like no actions have consequences anymore. Like, is it not going to be an issue that, like, they're flooding a property that Ashley manages? Like,
right.
But yeah. It seems to just be like a look at these lengths that Hannah and Caleb will go to in order to make this right for Spencer. It seems like that's what the show is trying to do here.
It's supposed to make the moment feel momentous, I think.
But, like, okay. So we know that Caleb, like, he has shut down the security footage for this 10-minute window. And, like, so let's say you're the police. Let's say you discover that the receipt room has flooded. And, oh, gosh, isn't it such a shame that all of your police cars were out of gas and you couldn't get here? Like, they must have just sent someone, like, walking from the station or bicycling maybe a few days ago. And they're just, like, still on their way. And when they get here, the receipt room is going to be flooded. And they're going to be like, golly gosh darn it, I can't get it. Well, when they do review the security footage, obviously Caleb and Hannah are going to be like in the hallways of the Radley. So is no one going to be like, oh, well.
They're like shaking down the staff. Like, did you initiate Hannah protocol?
Exactly.
So back in the security room, Caleb turns the security back on. He like goes off to go do something. And Hannah listens to a message from Mona explaining that she inadvertently made the girls think she was AD and once again ended up alone. On the security footage, Hannah sees Lucas here at the Radley.
Yeah, he's not even really looking very shady. Like, he's just knocking on the door of a room and then walking away.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
At Spencer's, she is waiting for an update when Marco calls. Does she know why he's calling? Spencer asks. How many guesses she gets? He says she took something and he needs it back, or else he'll send an officer to her door. Once he mentions the drive, Spencer changes tack. She says, well, goodness, if she has it, that means that she was alone with him in his apartment this night. She wonders if people would find that strange. And I feel like Troyan's delivery of how she wonders if people would find that strange is so Mary Drake. And I'm here for it.
Yeah.
Love this turnaround. And Marco just like hangs up.
I love this. I love that they choose to stay on her face the entire time. So you're just hearing his menacing voice through the phone and like seeing her kind of just keeping her cool and what she says to him. Like, yeah, I agree. It's so great. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, it's also a very like noir movie. It's getting us back to that noir era of PLL.
For sure.
People would find that strange. People would
find that strange. Yes. My question though is, was it a secret that they were dating? Because like she was around the police station all the time. She was bringing him pastries. They were like going out on like midday community center outing. I get her point here, but I also think if it was not a secret that they were dating, it might not seem that strange.
Who can say? No clues, just vibes.
Just vibes, always with the vibes. So Lucas is frantically tearing around his loft looking for something when the liars appear suddenly downstairs, all of them. And I love this. I love the idea of like the liars surprising somebody because they are a group of so many, a group of five people. And I also just, I like whenever the liars get to be the ones surprising other people. I think it's very fun. Allie starts right in yelling at him about the crib, about how he destroyed it. Arya kind of lightly defends that particular event. Hannah brings up the police tape and Lucas says that he didn't stay friends with Charlotte. This is like another one of those scenes that's just very annoying because they're doing everything they can to dead name Charlotte, to misgender her, to like refer to her dead name and her actual name as like this is like two different people. It's just, it's a mess. It's a total mess. But the long and short of it is that Lucas is saying that he didn't stay friends with Charlotte. He felt guilty that he might have been part of the reason why they were tortured because of the emails he used to send her telling him about everything the liars used to do to him. This is where we have the amazing exchange. So that's why you stole back the comic book. It's a graphic novel. He says that for some godforsaken hat on a hat reason, there is another comic book that exists that turned vengeance into a game. That book was never finished, and that is the book that he apparently can't find, and that is now like the new MacGuffin for some reason. Also, like, so just like in this episode, we've got like the hard drive, we've got the receipt, we've got the comic book, now we have another comic book. We've got, what other MacGuffins do we have floating around?
The flash drive.
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, sort of like the mobile is also kind of another like object of importance in this episode. Like, it's too much. It's just too much. Arya's hearing.
Yeah, there is definitely a lot going on. I love this scene with Lucas and the liars so much because so often the liars have like all these wild theories about whoever is like the subject du jour, but usually they're just kind of like spinning their wheels about it, like at the brew or like at the barn. It's very rare, I feel like, that we actually get a scene where the liars have like cornered their suspect and are like,
yeah,
account for yourself. Or when they do, it's like Jenna is the suspect and like Jenna is just like, you know, gives them like a few pithy words and then like swans away, and the liars are just like totally befuddled. But like Lucas is like, he's like pinned under their gaze, like he cannot escape. I love that when they barge in, the first thing he says is, "I can explain why I'm here." I'm like, "Lucas, dude, I don't like you, but this is your loft. Like, you're allowed to be in the place that you own and presumably live when Hannah and Emily and Caleb are not living here." But I also really like when the liars are like kind of surrounding him and Hannah actually like pushes him in the chest and says, "Speak,"
like, <that's> a... like he's a little dog.
Yeah. So I really, I enjoy many, many things about this particular scene.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
And then at the loft, the other liars have decamped and now it's just Hannah and Lucas, and Lucas is downing some whiskey. He goes to leave and Hannah calls him back and she says that she believes him about everything, that he wasn't part of anything that happened to her and her friends, but she does want to know, why is the factory for sale? Was their business partnership ever real? And he says, oh, she's so talented, but he had trouble getting other people to see that. What about the investors? She asks. It's just him, he says. He was too embarrassed to tell her he couldn't do it anymore. So she lost him all his money because money is not real on this show. He'll make it back and she's worth it, et cetera, et cetera. He's officially putting in his bid to be Hannah's second husband, but he'll have to take a number behind Mona, who's hoping to be her first post-Caleb divorce wife.
Yeah, this is like another scene that's just kind of frustrating and weird because it's like, we had that whole thing with the investors. Like, I thought he was the investors, and I guess he is the investors, but like, it's just confusing.
I wish that the reveal here, because like when Lucas originally showed up, it was like, oh, he has this loft. He has like offices and apartments like all over the world. He has this Jag. He has limitless money. I wish that like what we actually found out about him was that all of that was a front, that like the Jag has been repossessed, that he didn't have, you know, like that his company was a pyramid scheme. Like, I wish that like that was the reveal we were dealing with instead of like, oh, backing Hannah for 2 seconds has apparently opened up like just a huge black hole of money. And now all of his is gone.
Yeah. And it's also like, Hannah is feeling a lot of guilt in this episode. She's feeling guilt towards Spencer. She's feeling guilt towards Mona. And like now she's feeling guilt towards Lucas. And it bums me out. Like this scene should be between her and Mona.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Yes. So Spencer is back in the interrogation room being told about the flooding in the receipts room by Marco. That must make your job very difficult, she replies, still cool as a cucumber. He makes it clear that he knows that she was involved, but she doesn't give anything away here, and he doesn't really have anything left to say.
Yeah, he'll just have to widen the scope of his homicide investigation, and he hopes her friends are as lucky as she is.
Yeah, their dialogue is just so noir-y at this point.
So Emerson is cleaning up the nursery and laughing about how Allison almost killed Lucas because she thought he was AD. And then they're chuckling about Emily running around trying to use a Pottery Barn candlestick as a deadly weapon. She says she doesn't know why she felt like she needed to protect Allie. Allie is the strongest woman she knows. This seems like it kind of unlocks something for Allison. And she says that Emily's always protected her. She admits that she's always known, ever since they met, that she could count on Emily. Emily asks, well, then why did Allison always push her away? The true answer here is she was scared of her feelings and what they would mean. But Allison says she doesn't know, but she's ready to stop. She says she wants to do this together as a family. And Emily is like, please clarify exactly what you mean by together. And Allison mentions her conversation with Paige. Then she tells Emily that she loves her. She says that Emily told her not to do this again unless she was sure. And then she kisses her. You know, this is actually a lovely Emerson scene. I don't love that it's about the rape babies, but I like them doing at least a small amount of processing together. And they kiss and kiss some more. It's like the third episode of queer women kissing. And, you know, it lasts for a full 15 seconds. I wish that we got a spinny camera with it, but I will at this point take what I can get.
That's very nice. You're being more generous with this scene than I think.
I told you, I'm trying to be an optimist.
I appreciate that.
Give us your take on this scene.
I don't have like a scalding hot take on this scene. I guess I do think it is sweet. I do think it's very sweet. And I do think it's like doing a lot of the work that this whole half season has not been doing to kind of show us like maybe these two are finally in the same place at the same time and ready for something approximating a relationship. I do really wish that Allison said what you just had her say, you know, that she was scared of her feelings, or that she never knew how to accept love, or, you know, that she grew up thinking that it was a sin to be in love with another woman or something, because like her just being like, I don't know. Like, it's just, it gives us nothing to work with. I think Sasha does her best, but it's like, okay, so you don't know. So I guess, all right. So
it does. I mean, I'm not saying that like the opening bars of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend Settle for Me is not like playing in my head when I watch this scene. But I do think that it does a nice job of talking about Emerson not as a story of this moment, but as a story that has stretched the duration of the show and before the show started, like that this has been going on between them for a long time, that Allison is consistently like, that Emily names the pattern, like, why are you always pushing me away? Sure. I do wish, and I do think it would be kind of important, like for me, if I were Emily, to get an answer on that. But Allison is like, who could say, but I'm ready to stop. I like that for them. And I also like Emily wanting to be like really clear on what they mean by together. And I'm also just like, after several weeks of this like real question of like, so what's going on with this little hot potato baby? Like, is it a tenant? Yeah. Is it going to live with Pam or Hannah or on the couch at the loft? Like, I'm glad that we have like, We now know that they're going to try to do this. It's going to be as a family unit and they're going to be together. I'm glad that like, and relieved that we finally have like an answer on that.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say a final thing that I kind of wish is that like, I wish we knew Emily's feelings at this point, because, you know, it's this, I'm so glad that we've like gotten a little bit of Allison processing and talking about her feelings, but like, the way that this is being written and the way that I think Emerson often is written, but like earlier seasons, I think it was with more nuance, is this idea that like anytime Allison is ready, Emily is there. And I think like in season 5, when Allison came back and there was all that stuff where she was like kind of trying all of the tricks on Emily and they weren't really working the same way, like I liked that a lot. That felt really interesting to me. And even like earlier in the time jump, when Emily would talk about like, oh my God, like Allison just always thinks if she calls me, I'll be right there. But like Emily is still showing up for her every time. Like all of that is really interesting. And then now it's just been like the weird, like she wanted Paige maybe, and she wanted, you know, she was into Sabrina for a little minute. And like, it's just, I wish that there had been more consistency with showing that they both want this, and that this isn't just a symptom of like Emily apparently wants a baby and Allison doesn't want to be alone.
Yeah. I mean, it's.
I'm not trying to burst your bubble here, because I get it.
No, I know. I am definitely not saying that like this is like the Emerson. You know, this is like the Emerson reunion of dreams. It is still very rape baby dependent, etc. But I will just say that like for as little Emerson as we have gotten, like, you know, I mean, as a person who has been like, who has been Team Emerson since The Perfect Storm, I've been waiting a really long time for Emerson to be Endgame. So yeah. I'm just really happy that, like, now here that we are, like, what, 5 episodes from the end? That, like, oh, look, it's Emerson. Emerson looks like maybe now it's finally going to happen. So better late and rape baby dependent than never. Let's not get to that point, but I am, like you said, I am happy that we are getting to a point where it seems like they're both going to be like in the same place at the same time, wanting the same things, and can maybe see how this relationship is going to go.
Yeah, I agree. I think an alternative version of this that could have been interesting would have been them deciding to raise the babies, not as a couple, and then developing feelings for one another over the course of the pregnancy. But, you know, this is the version that we have. And from this point forward in the series proper, at least, Emerson is together.
Right.
Are you happy, everyone?
I feel like it's almost like a question to the writers, like, yes. Why did you keep having Allison push her away for so long? And the writers are like, we don't know.
I don't know. Yeah. We want to be done now because, like, Allison at game t-shirts are selling pretty well. So, yeah. So Arya comes home to the loft. Her text to Prezzer about the press junket. It was literally just like, sorry, I bailed. Like, no explanation. Which I kind of love. Prezzer is like, don't worry about it. You didn't miss much, which is of course classic passive aggressive Prezzer. Arya observes the cut on her arm from the nursery. And then there's just this very like, sort of sad moment where she just breaks down in tears on the couch and like curls herself into a ball. And there's just this sense of like, she doesn't really know what's happening to her right now.
And she's so alone. Like she can't communicate with her partner. She is like estranged from her friends because of the secret. Like it's a mess. And why is this happening? Well, because of the fact that Prezzer was her teacher. Like, oh my goodness. One of the things that I really like is that his message back to her is like, you didn't miss much. I'll be home soon. Well, he's at the brew. He's at the place that's like literally downstairs from the apartment. And like, she doesn't even bother trying to go in and see him.
You can really literally see the lights of the brew outside his window.
Yes.
Scene. Yeah. I really like with this, you know, with the cut on her arm and like the way that she's reacting of sort of like, what's going on? Who have I become? There's almost this sense that like there is like a physical transformation into A that is happening, almost as if like to be A is like a growing sickness that's like overtaking her. And like maybe the scariest part of it of all is like, what if she likes it? You know?
Ooh. So earlier I kind of made a Star Wars reference when I was saying like, you know, give in to like the darkness and let it flow through you. And this is also kind of like, her like arm is messed up kind of like Luke loses his hand in the lightsaber battle. It is interesting. And I do think that like what they are doing with Arya during this particular portion of the show is like probably the most interesting plot line they have given her throughout the run. Like I really, because so often like Arya's plot line is just like, it's the zany rom-com, it's Prezzer. Like I really like that we're getting like some really serious identity work from Arya.
Yeah, I agree. It's forcing us to see her character in a slightly different way.
Yeah. And I think that Lucy is like being rewarded for the fact that she's really been showing up post-jump and really been trying her best. And like now she finally really has some material to like sink into. And I think that's really great.
I agree. I completely agree.
So for the A tag, the black gloved hand has the second comic. So we're just going to like close out on our MacGuffin of MacGuffins of MacGuffins. This second comic is called Arcturus Endgame. It seems to have exactly predicted the current game. Then on its final page, the gloved hand starts to draw the last panel. It's a gravestone. Here lies, they pen, dot, 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 and then it cuts away before we see whose name would be written. The end.
It's a really shitty drawing, too. Like, it must be hard. It must be hard to draw with those gloves on, but, like, it's a bad drawing.
Well, and, I mean, and I called it a comic, but I guess it's really a graphic
novel. Thank you very much. Yeah, that is the episode. That is, what is the episode title?
The Glove That Rocks the Cradle.
The glove. I was like, it's not These Gloves Were Made for Stocking, because that's a different episode title. Yeah, The Glove That Rocks the Cradle. Yeah. What are your final thoughts?
My final thoughts is that I just Googled this because I wanted to make sure that I had like the right terminology to explain it. And graphic novels contain complete narratives, whether or not they're part of a larger series. Comic books contain excerpts of serialized narratives. So excuse me, Lucas, it is a comic book.
Oh, burn. Okay. Wow. Well, I have a feeling Lucas would probably fight you on that one.
Let him try.
Yeah, come at me, Lucas.
Yeah, you know, Hannah pokes him in the chest. She's previously knocked him overboard with an oar. So I like my chances against Lucas, I feel.
Yeah, you're not too concerned. You're not too concerned. Yeah, this episode, it had some good moments. But again, just the larger mystery pieces remain pretty nonsensical.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's still ludicrous, but I feel like this episode, I didn't have that moment that I was having like in almost every episode previous to The Eye Abides, where I get to a point and I'm like, how are there still 9 minutes left? How are there still 10 minutes left? How are there still 12 minutes left? So this episode, I felt like at least like moved itself along at a good clip. It had enough MacGuffins in the mix. It had enough plot lines for all the liars. But it kept me engaged all the way through. So that is a plus, I think, at this time.
Yeah, I would agree. And next episode, we have Driving Miss Crazy. So we're just like taking all of these, you know, old movie titles and just inserting random transport changes.
Yeah, I mean, they ran out of ideas a while ago. So this is just where we are.
This is what we have to work with. Yeah. Yeah, I don't really remember that episode. It sounds like Peter and Mary are back, though.
Oh, I really, if this is the episode, yeah, this is going to be the episode where Arya has to, like, rig up the surround sound in the Hastings house to, like, play Peter's murder confession. Yeah, I'm very excited about that.
I love Arya really getting in touch with her dark side, you know?
Yeah, I really, I couldn't have told you, like, when we talk about, like, how many episodes is Cousin Nate in, or how many episodes does this go on for, I would have really said that, like, the Avataria stuff, like, if you were like, how long does that go on? I would have been like, I don't know, like, an episode, two episodes, but I'm delighted that it actually is going to be, like, yet another episode as we go into next week.
Yeah, I agree. Chugging toward that end game. Well, if you have thoughts on this particular episode, if you have your own personal definition of the difference between a comic book and a graphic novel, we, of course, want to hear from you. You can send us an email at everybodyapodcast@gmail.com. You can also check out our Instagram at everybodyapodcast. You can check out our Spotify, everybodya, everybodygay. I will say, like, we'll probably do a big playlist at like, as we're getting, you know, close to the series finale. So if you have suggestions of songs that you think would be, you know, a good fit for that playlist, please feel free to send those ideas in. And you can also always send in a rating and review on iTunes. We would appreciate it. So until next time, keep your comic books close, but your graphic novels closer.
All right, everybody. Take care. Thank you.